chapter 9. Brahma's prayers for creative energy. So this is Lord Brahma speaking this verse. This text number 11.
I'm not sure. Do we have? Is this working? This it worked a minute ago. Please put the amplification system on.
Is it not on? This one's on.
Yeah, it's on.
Oh, that's on. Yeah. Oh, then we can.
Move a little closer. Yeah. You got germs all over your mic. Are you ready?
Yes.
Tvam Bhakti Yoga
Bhakti Yoga
Paribhavita
Paribhavita
Prit
Saroje
Saroje Hase
Hase
Shruta
Shruta
Ikshita
Ikshita
Pataha
Pataha
Nanu
Nanu
Nata
Nata
Umsam
Umsam
Yat Yat
Yat Yat
Dhyā
Dhyā
Te Urukaya
Urukaya
Vibhavayanti
Vibhavayanti
Tat
Tat
Vapuhu
Vapuhu
Pranayase
Pranayase
Satanugrahaya
Satanugrahaya
Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Rit Saroja
Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Rit Saroja
Hase Sutekshita Pato Nanunata Pumsam
Hase Sutekshita Pato Nanunata Pumsam
Yad Yad Dhyata Rurugaya Vibhavayanti
Yad Yad Dhyata Rurugaya Vibhavayanti
Tat Tat Vapu Pranayase Sadanugrahaya
Tat Tat Vapu Pranayase Sadanugrahaya
Tam Bhakti Yoga Parivavita Rit Saroja
Tam Bhakti Yoga Parivavita Rit Saroja
Ase Sutekshita Pato Nanunata Pumsa
Ase Sutekshita Pato Nanunata Pumsa
Yad Yad Dhyata Rurugaya Vibhavayanti
Yad Yad Dhyata Rurugaya Vibhavayanti
Tat Tat Vapu Pranayase Tadanugrahaya
Tat Tat Vapu Pranayase
So Pranaya Se.
Yeah, it's Te on the board.
Oh, it says Pranaya Te. It should be a S.
S.
Pranaya Se.
Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Rit Saroja.
Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Rit Saroja.
Ase Shrutekshita Pato Nanunata Pumsa
Ase Shrutekshita Pato Nanunata Pumsa
Yad Yad Dhyata Urugaya Vibhavayanti
Yad Yad Dhyata Urugaya Vibhavayanti
Tat Tat Vapu Pranayase Sadanugrahaya
Tat Tat Vapu Pranayase Sadanugrahaya
Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Rit Saroja
Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Rit Saroja
Ase Sutikshita Pato Nanunata Pumsa
Ase Sutikshita Pato Nanunata Pumsa
Yad Yad Dhyata Urugaya Vibhavayanti
Yad Yad Dhyata Urugaya Vibhavayanti
Tat Tat Vapu Pranayase Sadanugrahaya
Tat Tat Vapu Pranayase Sadanugrahaya
Late? Oh, here's one. You can't see it. Right. That's the problem.
Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Rit Saroja
Tvam Bhakti bhakti yoga parivamitare saroja
ase shutekshita pato nanunata punsa
ase shutekshita pato nanunata punsa
yat yat diyata urugaya vibhavayanti
yat yat diyata urugaya vibhavayanti
tat vapu pranayase tadanugrahaya
tat vapu pranayase tadanugrahaya.
The lady side.
Tvam bhakti yoga paribhavita rutsaroja.
Tvam bhakti yoga paribhavita rutsaroja.
Ase shruti kshita pato nanunata pumsham.
Ase shruti kshita pato nanunata pumsham.
Yadyadhyata urugaya vibhavayanti.
Yadyadhyata urugaya vibhavayanti.
Tat vapu pranayase sadanugrahaya.
Tat vapu pranayase sadanugrahaya.
From
unto you,
bhakti yoga, in devotional service, paribhavita,
being
100%
engaged,
of the heart,
saroje,
on the lotus.
Ase,
you reside. Shruta ikshita, seen through the ear. Pataha, the path. Nanu, now. Nata,
O my Lord. Pumsam,
of the devotees. Yat yat,
whichever.
Jya, by meditating.
Te,
your. Guru Gaya, O multi glorious. Vibhavayanti, they specifically think of tat-tat, the very same, vapuhu,
transcendental form,
pranayase, do you manifest,
sat-anugrahaya,
show your causeless mercy. Translation. Oh my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing, and thus their hearts become cleansed, and you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The statement here that the Lord manifests himself before the devotee in the form in which the devotee likes to worship him indicates that the Lord becomes subordinate to the desire of the devotee, so much so that he manifests his particular form as the devotee demands. This demand of the devotee is satisfied by the Lord because he is pliable in terms of the transcendental loving service of the devotee. Pliable means you can easily bend it. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4:11. Ye tamam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajamyaham. We should note, however, that the Lord is never the order supplier of the devotee.
here in this verse, it is particularly mentioned, tam bhakti yoga paribhavita. This indicates the efficiency achieved through the execution of matured devotional service, or prema, love of God. This state of prema is achieved by the gradual process of development from faith to love. On faith, one associates with bona fide devotees, and by such association, one can become engaged in bona fide devotional service, which includes proper initiation and the execution of the primary devotional duties prescribed in the revealed scriptures. This is clearly indicated herein by the word Shuddhekshita. The Shuddhekshita path is to hear from bona fide devotees who are conversant with Vedic wisdom, free from mundane sentiment. By this bona fide hearing process, the neophyte devotee becomes cleansed of all material rubbish, and thus he becomes attached to one of the many transcendental forms of the Lord as described in the Vedas. This attachment of the devotee to a particular form of the Lord is due to natural inclination. Each and every living entity is originally attached to a particular type of transcendental service because he is eternally the servitor of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya says that the living entity is eternally a servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Therefore, every living entity has a particular type of service relationship with the Lord, eternal. This particular attachment is invoked by the practice of regulative devotional service to the Lord. And thus the devotee becomes attached to the eternal form of the Lord, exactly like one who is already eternally attached. This attachment for a particular form of the Lord is called Swarup Siddhi. The Lord sits on the lotus heart of the devotee in the eternal form the pure devotee desires, and thus the Lord does not part from the devotee, as confirmed in the previous verse. The Lord, however, does not disclose himself to a casual or inauthentic worshiper to be exploited. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:25. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samahitaha. Rather, by yoga maya, the Lord remains concealed to the non-devotees or casual devotees who are serving their sense gratification. The Lord is never visible to the pseudo-devotees who worship the demigods in charge of universal affairs. The conclusion is that the Lord cannot become the order supplier of the pseudo-devotee, but he is always prepared to respond to the desires of a pure, unconditional devotee who is free from all tinges of material infection.
Hare Krishna. Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaurani Prasadaya Nirvishesha Sunyavadi
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda
in this lecture we all have to give our best, because there's so many of us who are requiring a translation. So we have a really translation office atmosphere here. Also, yesterday was Icarus here, and we are a little tired, so I would suggest that maybe we can have one more window just slightly open, not completely, slightly, the kit open. Yeah, that is good. Mm-hmm. Once again, the verse. Oh my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing. And thus their hearts become cleansed, and you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. Hearing about Lord Krishna from bona fide devotees has been described to be almost a therapeutic hearing. When you take a therapy, you cure a disease, and the therapy is successful if you have cured the disease entirely. In the beginning of the 10th canto, Parikshit Maharaj describes that he drinks this medicine of the Bhagavatam through the ears from Shukadev Goswami. And as they go on this hearing marathon, where the Bhagavatam is told to Parikshit Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj notices a change. He says, ordinarily, everyone is attached to eating and sleeping. But as I'm hearing this Bhagavatam from your lips, Shukadev Goswami, I really do not desire to eat and sleep. You know, this he says after 5 days. It's not a theoretical euphoria. It's after 5 days of fasting, including even fasting from water. He says that the effect of the hearing is that he has lost his connection or lost his attachment to the bodily platform. This is a successful therapy. It worked. It's not theoretical. Here, in this verse, another effect is explained by Parikshit Maharaj. This is as far as I remember Parikshit Maharaj. No, wrong. Lord Brahma is speaking to Krishna. He says, what happens when devotees hear? Oh my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing. Now the results come from this hearing, and thus their hearts become cleansed. Second result is, and you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they all think of you. This verse is of great importance to our Sankirtan mission. Srila Prabhupada once in Los Angeles, was it Laguna Beach really, on a morning walk, made the point that devotees should regularly read his transcendental books. Mm-hmm. He said the books are meant for reading. There's another quotation where Prabhupada says, if you don't read my books, soon there will not be any longer Haribol, Haribol, Haribol. Because well, this is the quotation, and we will say, the hearing is important for a devotee because it cleanses him and it brings him in contact with Krishna, who's then in the heart by hearing. Another quotation by Srila Prabhupada, and now fasten your seatbelts. Prabhupada was sometimes a very stern teacher. He said, my only criticism in you is that you don't read my books. Sorry?
He said, you think they're just for distributing?
You think they are just meant for distributing. your thought is a sales item to get our economy in a different verb. You think it's just meant to help the conditioned souls out there, but you don't realize how important it is to study the books. It's very interesting that the Bhagavatam abounds, means it's full, with such encouraging statements about hearing, that anyone who hears regularly these books, he will have Krishna entering into the heart, and then the dirt is going out of the heart. There's a verse in the second canto, chapter 8, text 5. Pravishta kanarandrina. Kanarandrina means through the holes of the ears, and pravishta means entering. The verse says, the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, that is the Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a devotee and sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. When you eat with a Bengali gentleman, the Bengali gentleman will at the end of the meal say, and now come the sweets. You usually, because you're not from Bengal, you don't. Well, in ISKCON you expect a sweet at the end, but others may not expect an end of a sweet at the end. A little while ago, I ate with a Bengali gentleman in London, and then I had forgotten that at the end the sweet is served. So he said, and now comes the sweet. And I said, impossible. I'm full. I cannot eat any longer. So the Bengali gentleman educated me and said, you don't know what is a sweet. A sweet is like a king. There may be a room which is entirely full, but when the king wants to enter, he somehow will find his way and will go right to the center. And what this means is that usually some people who are sitting have to get up and go out. So this is a sweet. It goes right into the center of your system, the stomach, and it will make room for itself. Don't say you are full. You don't know what is a sweet. No problem if you are full. The sweet will know how to get inside of you and make place. So I would like to use this analogy for hearing the Bhagavatam. Yes, our hearts may be full. Here the qualities which are sitting there in material consciousness are said. It's lust, anger, and many material desires, hankering. Yes, our hearts may be full. We may be conditioned souls. I don't know if you sometimes are lusty, if you are angry and angry, no need to show your hands now. We have our material consciousness, we have our thing, but if you hear the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it will know how to enter your heart. And the result is that something has to get up and get out of the heart. And this is the material attachments, our material problems, our inauspicious things, it's called in Sanskrit, the abhadranis, the inauspicious things. Now, my dear devotees, have you heard Srimad Bhagavatam? I believe most of us hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly. But my question is, have all the inauspicious things left your heart? If I want to speak very truthfully about this question and answer it, I have to say, well, it has not yet left my heart. I'm still am feeling the pain of material consciousness. So what is wrong here? We apply a process and the result does not come. Well, if you apply a process and the promised result is not coming, it indicates that you may not know entirely how to apply the process in detail. And how to do this is explained really in the verse 284. We have listened to verse 285, that when you listen to the Bhagavatam, it enters into your heart and throws out the abhadranis, the inauspicious things. In text 4, that is one verse before it, it is said how to properly listen to the Bhagavatam. Shrinvata shadaya nityam grinatascha svacheshtitam kalena nati dirgena bhagavan vishate kridi. It's now very important. Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifested in their hearts within a short time. My dear devotees, if you should forget everything else of this short lecture, we don't mind. But these three things you must remember. These are three keys to hear the Bhagavatam properly. First is Shraddha. You must hear with some faith. You must invest your faith in the hearing process. As you hear, you need to connect where your faith is. Shra means heart. With your, it means something sentimental. It means your core beliefs, your what is your substance. That you need to do. If you have not yet developed faith in Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no harm, still you can benefit. If you theoretically accept it, you know, I know that I speak to devotees who, or guests who are also here, who may not be like the devotees who have dedicated their lives to Krishna consciousness practice. So our guests, even if you are still just in the process of just finding out what is this Krishna consciousness all about, and you don't have yet faith, you're building up your faith, then theoretically enter the exercise to think there's a God and he can speak to us. This is how Prabhupada writes in the preface of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, at least theoretically one must accept Krishna. So this means when you hear, you must have Shraddha, faith. The next thing to listen to the Bhagavatam is Nityam. Nityam means regularly. You must do it really every day. There are tremendous benefits. I know that Prabhupada at the beginning of our movement said we should all chant the second chapter of the first canto regularly, and he said, then you will become great scholars. When you hear something regularly, then this, what you hear, can really enter your heart and make a change. There was one devotee in Vrindavan this year. I had not seen for some time because he is in Australia and we are not. And he said, it was Prabhupada's disappearance day, and he talked about a meeting with Srila Prabhupada. This devotee, his name is Bhagavad Ashraya Prabhu, was on the Sankirtan party of the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And he knew it was difficult to see Krishna, to see Srila Prabhupada. But, and he knew that the servant of Prabhupada would maybe not give him permission to see, but he wanted to see Prabhupada before he went on one book distribution marathon and left the Krishna Balaram Mandir for 1 month. So he went alone in Prabhupada's room. It was around 3 o'clock, no one was there. And he said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, we are going now on Sankirtan." Prabhupada looked at him and nodded. And then he experienced something which many of us experience in Prabhupada's presence. He didn't know what else to say. He kept there and felt a little sheepish. Sheepish means a little foolish. Prabhupada looked at him. Prabhupada at that time had his feedback and was chanting. And then Prabhupada said something so deep. He said, if you regularly chant, then drip, drip, drip. For illustration, he took the cup which was on the marble, his low desk with the marble slab, and he dropped water on the marble. He said, drip, drip, drip. Then the marble, and then the holy name will veer away even stone that is covering of the heart. If you chant regularly, the holy name will veer away even a stone. That's all what Prabhupada said to him. Bhagavad Ashraya was happy. He knew his mission in life. He went out on the Sankirtan. This regular hearing or doing something spiritual regularly is very powerful. Srila Kirti reminds us that Prabhupada said, if you regularly go to Mangal Arati for 11 years, then everything you say will be the truth. Regular attendance of the Bhagavatam, that is another Brahman from the Bhagavat itself, is really taking away all the avadranis and will affect vijnana. Vijnana means a scientific knowledge, or we could say also a practical realization of Krishna. My dear devotees, I do not want to belabor the point. I want to just bring to your attention, if you want to be successful in your own God realization, that the Lord enters into your heart and throws out the, in Prabhupada's word, the rubbish, that is like a garbage, huh? Then you must hear with faith and regularly. However, and I will end with this last point. You must have one other qualification. The Sanskrit for this qualification is svacheshtitam. Svacheshtitam means seriously by one's own endeavor. May I ask you a question? When do you learn something? Something which you did not know before. Of course, I have my notes that you might feel intimidated. That a human being learns most of what he knows in two ways. One is a way we will not discuss today, and the other is a way which we will discuss. This other way is shravana, by hearing, then reflecting about what you hear, and then nididhyasana, which can mean meditating or applying. Then you learn something. We as devotees will say, no, this is not correct. If we want to learn something, we also have to pray to Krishna so that, it goes into the heart. I very much liked when I spoke with Ravindra Swarup Prabhu this morning about the idea of this class, and he said, I want to serve the Vaishnavas, I want to speak to them, but I want to make sure that I have chanted my rounds. Now he is a PhD, he can talk more intelligently than any one of us. But he knows, I want to be in good consciousness to reach to reach the devotees who have been endeavored so hard. I think this is a very good understanding. In the Upanishadic way, you learn by hearing, reflecting, and meditating about it, or applying it. In the Vaishnava way, you hear, you reflect, you meditate, and apply, and finally you pray to Krishna for empowerment, or for, you say, please, make the knowledge appear in my heart as a realization. Let us go through this, and I have chosen an example again, because you are hungry, and you will now listen very carefully. It's about eating. See, shravana, or hearing, is compared with bringing the food to the mouth and keeping it there. When you hear sacred scripture, you should be like a person who takes a pizza to the mouth. You should be attentive. In Ayurveda we understand that eating starts already when you are attentive to the process and touch the food and bring it here. Then the next step is you should think about what you have heard. You should reflect. And this is like bringing the food inside the mouth and chewing it for nourishment. Reflect means analyze what you have heard. Allow yourself to become affected by what you have heard by giving it your thoughts. Then you should enter into the process of contemplating the subject matter. Meditate about it, or do what you have heard. Take it, enjoy it. When you eat, you bring the food to the mouth. That's like hearing the scripture. Then you reflect. That's like chewing on it. you know, thinking about it, and then comes meditating about it, or even better, acting upon it. And then at that time, my dear devotees, you relish it. I remember the first time I did this. I went to the place where I used to go when I was young. It was a hippie place for free sexual activity. I mean, I was young, I did not participate in these activities, but there was music and in some rooms free sexual activities. So I went as a book distributor there. I went to the place where there was the music, and then I opened one room. Still remember that I opened the room, and for the first time in my life, I saw that the people there are Maya. They were identifying to the body. And what I also noticed for the first time, if I now think about Maya or contemplate, you know, look at it in this room where there was facility for free sense enjoyment, then I started to become affected also, and I saw that the interstitial things in my heart came also out. And then I thought, let me not now be in this room of free sense verification. And you may laugh about it, but I was going very methodically. Let me close the door and stay out of this place. Because I had philosophy. I had heard. This is Maya. Also to look at the sense objects is Maya. So then if you want to be free of Maya, just go. And I went with a great feeling of success out of the room. I had conquered Maya, and I felt very great that I had made some progress in my understanding in life. So it's a simple example, maybe a little graphic, and I want to really excuse myself in front of the ladies and the gentlemen here. I just wanted to say I acted upon the knowledge, and I had an instant realization I was coming out of Maya. I was not in the Maya there, which I used to be. Please don't get a shock. I was not so wild. I promise I was not participating in the room activities, but in the music activities I was participating. So yes. So if you contemplate about the subject of Shastra, then my dear devotees, you will relish it. The last thing is praying to Krishna. When you read, you should stop at times and pray for a realization. Pray to Krishna when Krishna, for instance, is glorified with sacred hymns in the scriptures. Make it your heart. See, when you start to pray, you will move from the content to the speaker. When you start to pray while you read, there are so many prayers in the Bhagavatam, and if you pray those prayers, you are actually turning to Krishna, and Krishna will quickly be in your heart. It's just like when you eat the food, you might, the spicing is alright, ghee is there, or it just tastes good. But there is another way to relish the food. It is to think of the person who is cooked. For instance, sometimes devotees cook a pumpkin soup for me. And I so much like pumpkin soup, especially in the winter. And you know, when you eat the pumpkin soup, there's two ways of eating it. One is to eat it with the senses, and the other to eat it with the heart. When you eat it with the heart, you think, oh, someone stood in the kitchen and cooked this pumpkin soup, and all of a sudden the attention from the soup turns to the person. So this happens as you pray the prayers of the Bhagavatam, you are no longer hearing or reflecting or meditating or applying the knowledge. No, you are now making the contact with the personality of Godhead through your prayers. In this way, your Shastric studies can be successful. This is an endeavor which you can do. So let me now summarize the Bhagavatam and then give this little presentation, and then I think you see I'm very nervous here because I'm speaking before a better speaker. Summary of the lecture. Prabhupada encouraged us to read the Bhagavatam. Why did he encourage us? Because there are two results for someone who hears the Bhagavatam. The Lord enters the heart and the inauspicious things go out. This, however, only works if the devotee applies the instruction of this verse. Those of you who make notes, this is a good time to make a note. Canto 2, chapter 8, text 4. There are three qualifications of the bona fide hearer, not the speaker. The bona fide hearer are given. Shraddha, do it regularly, nityam, and svaisheshitam, bring your own endeavor there. And I'm suggesting that the own endeavor which you can bring is hear it first, that means like bringing the food to the mouth, reflect on it, that means chewing the food. Do you know someone who only eats and doesn't chew it? He will pass air like a Boeing 2004. We'll be able to fly to the moon. You need to chew. So when you hear, you need to reflect. Then after you have reflected, apply it, or meditate it, that means like enjoying the fruit, and then finally your endeavor should be made, make contact with Krishna himself by praying to him, vandanam, praying. Hare Krishna. Thank you very, very much for listening. I hope I could serve you with these informations of sacred scripture. On a more private note, before the microphone wanders or goes to Ravinder Swaroop Prabhu, I must really, really tell you, I'm so absolutely inspired to be in your sacred assembly. It's such a sign of encouragement to see how you all are here for the Sankirtan festival. That means that you have done Sankirtan, or you feel you want to connect with Sankirtan and later do Sankirtan. This is very, very nice. And thank you so much for your wonderful service where you went on the marathon and so on. Very, very wonderful. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki Gaura Premanandi Hare Ko.
Thank you so much for a nice class. It's nice to be here in the presence of Lord Jagannath. Lanchayani Vasaya Nittaya Pavantane Jagannatha Balabhadra Supadrebyo Namo Namaha. So, seeing through the ears, we can see Krishna through the ears, and not only by that, because Krishna enters through the ears, sits down in our hearts, because he is very pliable or compliant with the desires of the devotees.
So we heard very nicely about this process of hearing. It's actually essential for Sankirtan, essential part of the Sankirtan movement. Prabhupada has described ourselves as belonging to the Sampradaya of the book. Brahma Sampradaya is the Sampradaya of the book. And so Prabhupada brought us these books, himself performing Sankirtan in the order of his spiritual master. And he's asked us to do the same thing. So Maharaj remarked that Prabhupada criticized us for not reading his books sufficiently and reading in the proper way. So let's talk about that. Here in Bhagavatam 1.3.44, we get instructions on how to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Because for Bhagavatam to take place, there has to be a qualified speaker and qualified hearers. Prabhupada explains this in this report, and then Bhagavatam actually takes place. When there's Bhagavatam and the speakers or the hearers or both are not qualified, Bhagavatam actually doesn't happen. So here, the last verse in the third chapter, the first canto, 1.3.44, Sudha Goswami says this, O learned brahmanas, when Shukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam, there in the presence of Emperor Parikshit, I heard him with rapt attention. And thus, by his mercy, I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I learned it from him and as I have realized it. These are his words. He heard it with rapt attention, nivishtaha, and you shall hear it yathaditam yathamati, as I have realized it. Now, this is Prabhupada's purport. Now, he's talking about what happens when you hear Bhagavatam. One can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Shukadeva Goswami. So immediately, Prabhupada says, seeing Krishna in the pages, that's the same thing as seeing by hearing. How can that happen? Because Krishna and Krishna's name are the same. The book that describes Krishna is actually identical with Krishna. And so when we become fully receptive to that book, Krishna appears. So we know our Bhagavatam hearing or reading is successful when we see Krishna directly, just as our chanting has finally reached its goal when Krishna's name is revealed, then his form is revealed, his qualities are revealed, his pastimes are revealed. All those things are simply there in the syllables Hare Krishna. When that syllable is said fully, purely, then you see everything. So here he says, so the same process as chanting as with Bhagavatam. One can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam. He's also talking about what we mean by realized knowledge. Realized knowledge means it's vijnana, you experience it yourself. It's science. Prabhupada says, jnana, knowledge means information that's contained in the Vedas, but vijnana, it's scientific because one has directly perceived it. So one has to hear from the proper person, self-realized great soul, like Shukadeva Goswami. And then he says, one cannot, however, learn Bhagavatam from a bogus, hired reciter. whose aim of life is to earn some money out of such recitation and employ the earnings in sex indulgence. He's talking here about the professional reciters. For Prabhupada, professional was a bad word. For us in the West, when something is well done, we say it's professional. But for Prabhupada, it means something that's done just for the money. So actually, somebody who makes his living by reciting Bhagavatam. Very skillful people, good at telling stories, like actors. They can cry on cue and everything. I've seen them. But it actually, the only thing is they earn some money, and but they do not follow any regular principles. Employ the earnings in sex indulgence. No one can learn Srimad Bhagavatam who is associated with persons engaged in sex life. That is the secret of learning Bhagavatam. So now he mentions this word secret, which you will use many times in this purpose. There's an esoteric aspect to Bhagavatam that you have to know. Then he says, nor can one learn Bhagavatam from one who interprets the text by his mundane scholarship. That's another place the Bhagavatam does not happen, even though it may seem to. You can go to universities, and in many places they professors of Sanskrit or Hinduism will teach Bhagavatam to students. And these professors, sometimes they know it better than we do. They know Sanskrit, they've learned it. They, in one sense, they know it very, very well. But still, although they say the Bhagavatam, it doesn't happen. Even though the words are there, because in this case, the teacher and the student both are unqualified. So it doesn't happen. One has to learn Bhagavatam from the representative of Shukadeva Goswami and no one else, if one at all wants to see Lord Sri Krishna in the pages. He's mentioned it again. See Krishna in the pages. That is the process, and there is no alternative. So with Bhagavatam, you see, there's something that has to be done, a culture of Bhagavatam, so that it takes place. There has to be bona fide hearers and bona fide speakers. Therefore, Prabhupada has the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It wasn't just necessary to bring the book to the West. He also had to create the conditions under which the book could actually be revealed. Therefore, ISKCON. Not a necessary evil, but a prerequisite for understanding and hearing Bhagavatam. We'll see. Prabhupada goes on to this. What has to happen? That is the process, and there is no alternative. Sutta Goswami is a bona fide representative of Shukadeva Goswami because he wanted to present the message which he received from the great learned Brahmana. Shukadeva Goswami presented Bhagavatam as he heard it from his great father. And so also Sutta Goswami is presenting Bhagavatam as he had heard it from Shukadeva Goswami. So that's the parampara system. In other words, one who is properly heard then becomes the proper speaker for the next time. Sutta Goswami is the proper speaker because he is properly heard. And Sutta Goswami is the proper speaker because he is also properly heard. So then the question is, how to hear properly? So Prabhupada turns to that. He says, simple hearing is not all. So the hearing process, is simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text. There's that word, realize, where the Krishna appears. One must realize the text with proper attention. So now we find out that for realization, it depends upon attention. The word Navishta means that Suta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. Here's our eating and drinking metaphor. He drank it through his ears, Navishta, so eagerly, just like a really thirsty person. You've been running, you're very thirsty, and then somebody brings you some cold juice. How do you drink that? You're so eager to drink it, relishing every molecule. When it hits your tongue, your taste buds jump up and dance in ecstasy. So this is what it means. One has to drink the juice of Bhagavatam, but through his ears. Ears can drink and see. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention. Rapt means, you know, completely absorbed. Rapt attention from the real person. And then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. So this book, Bhagavatam, because Krishna and Krishna's book are the same, Abhinatva, Nama, Namana, there's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's name. Now the names of Krishna, they all mean something. Krishna means all attractive. Rama means one who gives the highest bliss. And we sing Jai Radha Madhava, that's a name. Madhava, who's controlled by Radha. Kunja Bihari, who sports in the groves of Vrindavan. And then names are longer. Yamuna Tira Vanachari, he who wanders on the groves on the bank of the Jamuna River, is a name of Krishna, a longer name. Somebody could be called Jamuna Tira Vanachari Das, if you wanted to do that. So you can just go longer and longer and longer. So you may just think of Bhagavatam as one big name. It's the same process, just describing Krishna. So therefore, when this book is heard the right way, it in a way it becomes transparent. For it's like a magic book. You open a book, you read about New York City. And if the author is really good, you can almost feel yourself on Fifth Avenue or walking through Central Park or all these other things, and looking at the Brooklyn Bridge and all these. But what if you opened the book and you were there? It was a magic book that transported you right to Fifth Avenue. Hopefully when the Rathi Yatra is going on. So Bhagavatam is like that book. It actually takes you there. So one has to realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. So again, he talks about this secret. Now the Prabhupada is telling us the secret. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. So now we're going to find out what we have to do to be able to give that kind of attention to the topics of Krishna. So the first requirement, pure in mind. The mind cannot be cluttered with garbage. You have to shut those doors to those rooms where all those things are going on. You have to clean it out. The mind has to be pure. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. So to be pure in action means our behavior has to be clean and pure. If there's any impure behavior, definitely the mind will be polluted, and then we cannot give that kind of attention that is needed. We will be distracted because there'll be noisemakers in the mind and pullings and things like that. Then he says, so we have to be pure in mind, but we cannot be pure in mind without being pure in action. And then he says, No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, hearing, and making. In other words, even the most basic animal activities of life have to be done in a pure way. Eating, sleeping, fearing, defending, mating, they may go on. But we have to eat purely, sleep purely, defend purely, and mate purely. And we discover that Prabhupada told us how to do all those things. That's the life of a devotee. And we live with such people who are doing the same things. Otherwise, it would not be possible to be pure like this. That's why I said why ISKCON is necessary for Bhagavatam. The Prabhupada concludes his purport, but somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person, at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Sri Krishna in person in the pages of Bhagavatam. So this is the instruction that he has given us. And so we have to understand that ISKCON has to be the place where Bhagavatam actually happens. I take an example from linguistics to illustrate this potency of a qualified hearer and a qualified speaker. There was J.L. Austin was the name of a philosopher in England who was engaged in linguistic analysis. At one time, that was analyzing language was the big philosophical activity. And so what are actually the functions of language? And Austin became famous for pointing out that language does different things, not just convey information. And he talked about a group of functions of way language works that actually does things. He called these, he gave them a very strange word in English, he apologized for it. He called them performative utterances. Utterances means a speech that actually makes something happen. So he gave the example. Let us say there is a judge sitting on the bench, and next to him is a prisoner who's just been convicted of a crime. And the judge says to the prisoner, I sentence you to 10 years in jail. See what happens? That person goes to jail. That utterance actually did something. So there's a series of things like that. The priest says, I now pronounce you husband and wife. They're married. He has the potency. They're married. Or even simpler ones, you're at an auction. I bid $100,000. You know, you've committed, something's happened. So it's not just words. Now, Bhagavatam is not a performative utterance, but for a performative utterance to work, you have to have qualified speakers and qualified hearers. The judge who says, I sentence you to 10 years, has to be an authorized judiciary person, authorized by the state, and qualified in whatever way is necessary to be the judge. The prisoner has to have been convicted of a crime by whatever due process of law is there. Then when you have a qualified speaker, the judge, and a qualified hearer, the convicted criminal, then when he says, I sentence you to 10 years in jail, it happens. Right? If I walk up to you on the street and I say, I sentence you to 10 years in jail, what happens? Nothing. Thank you. So, like that, if Bhagavatam is, as Prabhupada talks about, spoken in a classroom on Hinduism or by some persons who are doing it for the entertainment value, it doesn't happen, even though it may seem to be there. The same word, I sentence you to 10 years in jail, but suddenly you go potency.
But when the Bhagavatam, when the speaker and the hearer are qualified, then the potency is manifest. So therefore, Prabhupada came to us as a qualified speaker, and the thing he wanted to do was turn us into qualified hearers, so that we should also become, in turn, qualified speakers for others. That's called the parampara system. He wanted the parampara to continue. Unlike some people think he wanted it to stop with him. you have to really not understand Prabhupada to even believe that. So, ISKCON, we have to have the society in which Bhagavatam is spoken. It can only be, this realization process has to take place in the association of devotees. That's what the Sankirtan is. Sankirtan means all together. And so first of all, there has to be the association of devotees. Then the second element of Sankirtan is we have to bring others in to increase that circle of devotees. So when we are distributing book distribution, distributing books, most we can do on the street with the book in our little presentation is maybe create some little faith, some shraddha, that they like the devotee and the book is interesting. I know, I mean, the first time I got a book of Prabhupada's, or a pamphlet in this case, from a devotee, and I opened it up, and I could not understand a word of it. I read it, and I couldn't, and it was a very simple lecture, it was transcribed. It was called, Who is Crazy? And I was in that third time, I was in my PhD program, I could read things and understand things, and I couldn't understand it. Because I was such a Mayavadi, you know, I just was completely veiled. But still, you know, somehow or other, something was interesting, and I ended up coming to a temple. So that next step has to be there. Ado shwada tattu sadhu sangha. So there has to be association of devotees. So when the books go out and we create hopefully some initials, shraddha, so then they have to come, and this has to be the place where now they can find out what this book is that they've gotten, where they can find out how to live the life of the Bhagavatam, and so that Bhagavatam will be revealed to them. If we are not living that life, we are not doing our job at the same time. And the other thing is that if we ourselves are absorbed in Bhagavatam, we will become very potent distributors of it. Because everybody knows, you know, Hollywood puts out these movies all the time, and they spend a fortune on advertising. And sometimes they spend a fortune on advertising and the movie flops. If there's big advertising, the first weekend it opens, many, many people will go, and then suddenly nobody goes for the second weekend. On the other hand, some movie will come out that they didn't spend any money on advertising, and it becomes a big success. And people are going for it week after week after week. What is the mystery? Well, they found out it's word of mouth. What really convinces people is when somebody they know say, I saw this movie, it was great. And then people go. That's just the enthusiasm. Or somebody said, yeah, some big advertised blockbuster movie, I went to that, it really stunk. And people just stay away. That's the most potent. To have that potency, you have to love it. To bring people to Bhagavatam, you have to have read it and getting something out of it and saying, this is the most wonderful book I ever read, and you're not just reciting lines. If you ever had the misfortune of being trained as a salesman for a material product, like a vacuum cleaner or something, and go door to door, what they try to do is fire you up to think that this vacuum cleaner is the most wonderful thing that ever happened. They really try to make you believe it as a salesman, because the more you can convince yourself that it's true, the more potent it will be. This is called brainwashing. But in our case, we are really supposed to become absorbed in Bhagavatam and then pass it on. Interestingly enough, Prabhupada more or less continues the purport to this verse I just read in the next verse, which is the first verse of the next chapter, where the verse says in the beginning of the fourth chapter of the first canto that Shonaka Rishi stands up and very happily congratulates Suta Goswami. He's overjoyed. He says he stood up to congratulate Suta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Shukadeva Goswami and also realized it personally. Now Prabhupada talks about what this realization, some other aspects of this realization. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya. And at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. So on the one hand, let me just finish. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it. Yet it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. So that's very interesting. It means that you can exactly maintain with complete faithfulness what the previous acharya has said. And yet because you realize it is common to your heart, you've made it your own, when you express it, it's in a way that it can be communicated to people who may be very different from the ones the previous acharyas were talking to. So realization gives the potency for preaching. Just to show an example, if you ever tried to read Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's writings in English, you can understand how difficult he was to understand. His English is huge words, long sentences, and when I sat down and tried to read it, I couldn't understand it at first. I had to go really, really slow and really pay attention, which I think was his purpose. And I finally figured out what he was saying after about a half an hour's work in a paragraph to find out that I already knew it because Prabhupada had already said the same thing in very simple and easy to understand English. Bhaktisiddhanta says the tri-quadrantial expansion. What is the tri-quadrantial expansion? Well, it's the three-fourths of the spiritual world. Tri-quadrantial is three-fourths. And so on, like this. So Prabhupada heard from Bhaktisiddhanta, but then when he spoke it to us, a very different language. But it was the same thing. So that one needs this realized knowledge. That one can have speak it so that it can be understood by others. So this is the process of the culture of Srimad Bhagavatam. And when one engages in that process, from the verse today, we see how much Krishna is, Prabhupada used the word pliable, to the desires of the devotees. One of Krishna's qualities, his 40th quality, is called prema vashaha. It means he is controlled by love. Although Krishna is the supreme controller, he becomes the controlled by the love of his devotees. This is a very interesting fact about Krishna. And that's why it also says one of the characteristics of the devotional service, Sri Krishna Karshani, devotional service attracts Krishna. And therefore, Prabhupada says that devotional service is transcendentally more powerful than Krishna. Pure devotional service, excuse me, is transcendentally more powerful than Krishna. Because Krishna is attracted by the devotional service of the devotees. And this is why we have ourselves Krishna consciousness, because of the devotional service of the previous acharyas have attracted Krishna. Prabhupada tells us that how he received the order from his spiritual master to preach in English in 1936. He meant go to the West. Prabhupada was astonished to receive this order. He had written Bhakti Siddhanta, "You're my godbrothers who are sannyasis and brahmacharis. They're doing so much to serve you. But I don't know, what can I do? I'm a householder. I'm very entangled." And he got a letter back saying, what you can do is preach in English. This was a well-known desire of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He'd already ordered many of his leading sannyasis to go to the West. But he was very disappointed in that. But therefore, Prabhupada was very astonished to see this. Hear this from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he said, I couldn't imagine what I would do. He was doing business in Bombay, it was 1936, he was married, had a family. But then he said, by reading Vishwanath Chakravarti's purport to Vyavasana Gabuti, that this concentrated determination, Vyavasana Gabuti, means to take the order of the spiritual master as the life and soul and abandon all other considerations. Prabhupada said he took some inspiration and said, I thought, in fact, I'll follow this order. I don't know how, I'll just do it. So he began writing in English and publishing back to Godhead and so on. So eventually, 1965, he ends up in Los Angeles. He was talking about this on the disappearance day of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he's in 67, I think. Anyway, Prabhupada said, he said, now on this auspicious day of my spiritual master's disappearance, I shall give you the same order he gave me. First of all, you have understood this Krishna consciousness to some extent. That is, you should actually become Krishna conscious yourself. And then he said, you should have some feeling for suffering humanity. So Prabhupada gave us the same order. In Bhakti Siddhanta's terms, it was go to the West. But what did that really mean? That people are suffering. Even though at that time, especially in the West, everybody's thinking we're happy, but everybody in India is suffering. But it's not the people in the West who suffer. I mean, and then he explained that there are various understandings about why people are suffering, but we understand what the root cause is, the want of Krishna consciousness. So that's his order. You should have some feeling for suffering humanity. So, in this way, that's why Prabhupada came to the West also, was this feeling for suffering humanity. And you can see how much difficulty Prabhupada went through to come to the West. It was not an easy thing for him. When he showed up on the shores of America, he was 70 years old without youthful energy, and he was not in good health. He had no money. He had no institutional support. Really, he was just without any visible means of support. And yet, in spite of all that, everything worked out.
My impression is that the reason this happened is that Prabhupada had really pleased Krishna. Just by his devotional service, Krishna's heart went out. And he says to Prabhupada, you've worked so hard, you've done so much service, because of this attitude of complete surrender. You've done so. Now, what can I do for you? Whatever you want, I'll do for you. And remember in today's purport, how the Lord is compliant to the desires of the devotee, but not the order supplier. Because what is the devotee going to ask for? A big house, a car, pure devotee. No, what is he going to ask for? And I know what Prabhupada asked for. He said, you see all these people, these hippies, these kids in America, I want you to give them Krishna, make them Krishna conscious. I'm sure that's what Prabhupada said. And then Krishna says, well, they're not qualified. And Prabhupada says, I know that, but I still want it. Well, I think that's what it is. That this is how people get saved, because devotees feel compassion. And so also we should, actually just by following Prabhupada's orders to distribute books, to preach Krishna consciousness, we are at least instruments of Prabhupada's compassion if we don't have any ourselves. Sometimes in the beginning it is hard to be compassionate. I remember my first months, every day we'd go out on the streets. It was the dead of winter when I moved into a temple. And 1 hour one would chant, half of the devotees would chant and the other half would distribute Back to Godhead magazines and change places and do this all day long. And so one is out in the street, it was very cold. We had Harinam every day, no matter how cold it was. Big boots and big coats. The Sankirtan leader saying, dance, dance, look whistle, look whistle. And it was so, anyway. And I was really suffering heavy withdrawal symptoms from sense gratification. And it was so austere in the temples in those days. No heat, everybody lying on the floor, 8 people to a little room. The only day you could eat was Sunday if they're guesting you, otherwise it was not much to eat. Anyway, I was feeling withdrawal symptoms from sense gratification, so when I see these karmis go by, I'm supposed to feel sorry for it. I had a hard time not envying them. But still, even in that condition, simply by following Prabhupada's orders, then as one matures in devotional service, then one begins to actually understand and see that these people, who they think they're enjoying, but they're actually suffering. How can we save the world? The same way Prabhupada did. We should act in such a way that Krishna is attracted. Simply by taking his order very seriously and dedicating ourselves to it, by understanding his purpose, and doing everything to save the fallen souls, and Krishna will gratify our desires. And our desire should be, I want you to save all these people. Because they're only going to get worse and worse as time goes on. So the compassion of the devotees needs to increase as time goes on. But the verse we had today, just a conclusion, I want to have an interesting thing. This verse we read today is also quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it occurs in the context of an appeal to the Lord for his mercy. Here it is. Advaita Charya is thinking, Sri Krishna, who is very affectionate toward his devotee, sells himself to a devotee who offers him merely a tulsi leaf and a palm full of water. Advaita Acharya considered the meaning of this verse in this way, not finding any way to repay the debt he owes to one who offers him a tulsi leaf and water. Krishna thinks, there's no wealth in my possession that is equal to a tulsi leaf and water. Thus the Lord liquidates the debt by offering himself to the devotees. Considering in this way, the Acharya began to worship the Lord. Thinking of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, he constantly offered tulsi buds and water from the Ganges. He appealed to Sri Krishna with loud calls and thus made it possible for Krishna to appear. That's why Mahaprabhu appeared, the calling of Advaita Acharya. What was he really concerned about? How the people were so fallen. Therefore, the principal reason for Sri Chaitanya's descent is this appeal by Advaita Acharya. The Lord, the protector of religion, Dharma Sekhu, appeared by the desire of his devotee. And then it quotes from Mukti Yoga Paribhavita Hitsaroja. Oh my Lord, you always dwell in the vision and hearing of your pure devotees.
So this is a little different translation.
You also live in their lotus-like hearts, which are purified by devotional service. O my Lord, who are glorified by exalted prayers, you show special favor to devotees by manifesting yourself in the eternal forms in which they welcome you. So that also explains how this verse, oh, Prabhupada says, the essence of the meaning of this verse is that Lord Sri Krishna appears in all his innumerable eternal forms because of the desire of his pure devotees. So that brought Lord Chaitanya, and that brought Mahaprabhu here. And so we have to continue the message here. You want to know where it is? This is Adi Leela 1, Adi Leela 3, 111.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So someone has some questions, huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. No,
you can ask questions. Maharaj?
Yeah, about realization. It's kind of a mystical term. But how does attempting to teach what we've read affect realization? Or...
He asks, how does attempting to teach what we have read affect realization? Yeah, it does, and Prabhupada said that. But you'll notice that if you say you hear a class, and you know that you're going to have to tell somebody afterwards what was in that class, you pay a lot more attention. So if you have to teach something, then it really forces you to learn it. So that's one thing. That's also how the first, when I, again, my early experiences of going out on Sankirtan, I said, how can I go out? It was the second day in the temple, I don't know anything. They said, just say what you've spoken and don't speculate. And so what I did, we had this little pamphlet called On Chanting Hare Krishna, which I more or less memorized it, the sections of it. I was terrified in that speculating, and so I just said it. And just by hearing myself speak, I began to think about what it meant more and more. And then people would ask me questions, and I wouldn't know the answer, and so I would just say, I'm just new here, so I don't know the answer to that question, but if you come back here tomorrow, I'll tell you. And then I would ask the devotees, what's the answer to this question, what's the answer to that question? So it really helps you learn by having to speak, because you listen to yourself say it, and you have to get it in order. And you have to put it in your own words. In the beginning, I was just almost literally repeating what I had heard, but gradually it took on, I could say the same thing in different words, according to the person I was talking to. That's one way. It makes you pay attention and makes you try to assimilate it, make it your own, and speak it naturally to others.
I see Preetu Prabhu is there, and then next to Preetu Prabhu was it there, and there also, yes.
Ravina, three things. I want to congratulate you. This lecture was brilliant, and was really to use Papa's word nectarine. It was very nectarine how he spent this verse. Thank you very much for it. Now, you said two things. One is how Krishna made things happen because of Srila Prabhupada's depths of devotion, dedication, etc. And there's two stories I found out that generally are not known in ISKCON. I learned it recently by talking.
Excuse me, can everybody hear Preetu Prabhu?
Can everybody hear this?
Maybe we need a microphone over there.
That may be.
We have the cordless mic or. This one.
Otherwise, I can speak quite loudly.
Okay, yeah, please do.
There are two stories that I heard recently from Narottam Gupta, the father of Lila, the Ayurveda doctor. And he was saying, and it shows Prabhupada's dedication and sacrifice, that when he came to Vrindavan, he was not living in this Vamsi, Vamsi Gopal, whatever temple. He was living actually in Keshigat, in one of his alcoves, when you go by the Yamuna River. And he was tortured by mosquitoes. He had one malaria attack after the other. He was living there in summer and even in the winter time at one time. And Gupta said to him, he was known as Bhagavad Baba, you have to get out of here, you'll die. He said, I have no money. He said, but why are you here? He said, simply, I want to preach the message of Krishna. So he went to such extraordinary, anybody here who has been in Vrindavan, you know, when you go along Keshigat, on the left side you have the Yamuna River, the steps leading down. On the right side we have these alcoves, and one of them is the Keshi demon. Krishna takes his fist into the mouth of the Keshi. He was living in those. Sometimes you see some Baba smoking ganja, loitering in these little alcoves. That's what Prabhupada was actually living. Yeah. It's just astounding, and we never heard this before. Yeah. Another thing is that Krishna makes things happen. Narottam Gupta told me that Prabhupada, he saw him many, many times before Prabhupada came to the West, sitting under that tree that now is in the courtyard of the Krishna Balaram temple. He would sit under that tree with his cartons and chanted Hare Krishna.
Wow.
It's just a beautiful thing to imagine how Prabhupada was, what he was thinking, obviously became stone. It became many things.
Yeah, yeah.
And this beautiful temple, and see the power of the presence and the thoughts and the day, how everything comes together. His being manifested this this beautiful, gorgeous temple that he has not in Krishna Balaram.
Thank you.
Krishna, there was a devotee next to him.
Prabhu, you told that in the beginning you were going every day on Harinam. Can you tell something more about it? If you were doing long hours, like all day long, and is it in the books at the same time?
Yeah, just to give you a taste of what it was like at that time. I lived in the temple, my wife and I, and two children, in January of 1971. You couldn't be a devotee living outside the temple in those days. First of all, the devotees didn't think you were bona fide unless you moved to the temple. There was no support anyway for so we actually moved in. The first time anybody who had children moved into the temple. And that's what they did. There was a Panchatattva picture on the altar. And the whole temple went out like about 10 o'clock in the morning. And stayed out all day long until about 5 or 6 in the evening. It was January, so that didn't. The only time we didn't go out was when it was raining, because that might damage the Vedanga. But otherwise, we went out every day. And that was our policy, was to stand on the street corner and chant while half the devotees, that time we had Back to Godhead magazines, you get a quarter of a magazine. We just did this every day, day in and day out in all kinds of weather. I had two children. One was maybe like 2 years old, and the other was 6 months old. And they had to go out too. And it really disturbed the sankirtan leader because the children were freezing cold and they would cry. And people would come up to my wife and say, oh, these children, they shouldn't be out here and everything. So a little while later, we convinced them that the children didn't have to go out. My wife had to stay back and so she could take care of the children, but she had to also clean the temple and do all the wash and all those other kind of things. So. Yeah, so that was our method. It was tough, and there was almost no income. That was our entire income. Was these every day you make about $20 or $25 at these quarter donations and like that. But things were sometimes unusual things that happened. They made me the treasurer, which was really odd, because in my married life, my wife took care of all that stuff because I have no emotional relationship with money. Tamal Krishna of Maharaj once told me, he says, you don't have one drop of Aisha blood, do you? And so they made me the treasurer. I realized there was Krishna's plan to like bring me close to reality a little bit. And so one day I was looking, it was a Friday, and I realized that on Monday the rent was due, at that time it was $400 a month for this building we rented. And I didn't have, there was no money was going to come. I looked at, if we had a really good Sankirtan day, maybe on a Saturday, we'd make $50 at the most. And Sunday feast would give us another $25, and if there were no spiritual sky incense accounts that we could do, and there was just not going to be any money. I went to the temple president and I told him the situation. He didn't know what to do, of course. So I went to bed that night thinking $400. I woke up the next morning thinking $400. Probably standing my job at thinking $400. We went on the Sankirtan, so we're out on the same street corner, this Broad and Chestnut, and one of the main street corners, shopping streets on Saturdays, full of people. And so in those days we had no pockets. There was no pockets in dhotis, and we had didn't have kurtas with pockets. And so we had bags around our neck. There was a bead bag, there was a Lakshmi bag. And sometimes you had a little bag with simply wonderful things that we could pass out to people. So I was on the corner opposite the Sankirtan party. You go to the four corners. And this is our distribution technique. Take one, please. Holding out back to Godhead magazines. And every so often somebody would stop and say, I'm going to give you 25 cents. So while I was doing this, I happened to look across the street toward the Sankirtan party, and there was people waiting for the light to change, and I saw one guy was looking straight at me. When I looked back, he was coming across the street and he was still looking straight at me. I thought, wow, this guy wants to back to Godhead magazine. So he came by, well, he came up to me, instead of slowing down, he kept on going really fast, and I had his magazine for him to take one. And instead, he slid an envelope underneath my thumb, and he just kept on going. And I reached out with my other hand, I had a Simply Wonderful, and I said, please take this. And he reached back and took the Simply Wonderful and just disappeared into the crowd. And the only thing he said was, for Krishna. And I looked at the envelope, and I sealed white envelope, and I could see a $50 bill, but it was thick. And I just knew without opening this, there was going to be eight $50 bills there. I just put it in my money bag and didn't say anything. I was just so bored, amazed. And then when we got in the Sankirtan van, I opened it in front of everybody. I knew that was $400. thing like that. I thought we figured that Krishna must have sent a demigod or something to. Nobody had ever seen that person before or after anything. There it was. So sometimes things like that would happen on Sankirtan. And gradually we became more sophisticated. We learned how to, instead of saying, take a back to Godhead magazine, we'd have them a card. And they say, take this card. And everybody take a card. And Jay, take this too. Magazine and so on. But there was a lot of austerity in those days. And people thought we were out of our minds. What are you doing standing on the street corner with a bed sheet on? Anything else?
Yes. Yeah, in the back.
Yeah. My question was concerning Maya and some of her features. One of those features has two sides, attachment and aversion. So my question is dealing with how do we properly, I don't want to say identify, but how do we properly understand this aversion in Krishna consciousness?
When you have aversion, then this subject matter which you are opposed to is very much in your heart. You think about it. It haunts you in some ways, and in this way Maya has taken control over you. I think we all remember the story which Srila Prabhupada told about aversion and how aversion just works just like attachment, in the same way you think of Maya. Aversion in German language is so wie eine, ja, Aversion, wie sagt man das in guten Hochdeutsch? Abneigung, ja, eine Abneigung. Maya funktioniert durch Anhaftung und durch Abneigung. Both attachment and aversion really means you occupy your mind with the thing. There is this story Prabhupada told about two brahmanas going to a river, and one brahmana, and there's a woman, and the woman wants to cross the river, but she is afraid to lift her sari up because there are men. She doesn't know it, she cannot trust. So she asked these two good brahmanas, can one of you please carry me over the river? And the young one says, yes, and carries her on his back, and the other even pretend, just doesn't see her at all. He's like a woman hater. Ignores her. So both arrive at the other bank of the river. Both set her down. No one sets her down, and then they continue to walk. Now after 5 hours, the elderly brahmana says, what kind of person are you? You were very close to the woman. You carried her. And the young answers, yes, I carried her for 5 minutes, but you carry her already for 5 hours in the mind. So both, attachment and aversion carries Maya in the mind, because you occupy your mind. Therefore, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one verse is quoted from the 11th canto, which says, a person should neither praise nor criticize anything in this world. And of the two, to not criticize is a more. So when you are so much criticizing something, you will have it in your mind. I do know that there was several of God brothers who criticized the poor Grihastas so heavily. And they said many things about them, you know, the association with the woman and these women and their power and so on. And at the end, they all married. Because they carry the concept in the mind, attachment and aversion to the same. It's in taking Maya serious. Hare Krishna. It is my intuitive feeling that we are now very eager for prasadam.
One moment. Oops.
Let's see if you can figure out how to organize this sort of thing.
Guess what?
That's not his job. Local management.
Vedanta Kritis just asked me to just give you a very brief orientation. We will now take prasadam. Breakfast prasadam is supposed to be here on this list. The list is just a suggestion list. By the way, the other lecturers who have not yet spoken will get their chance tomorrow. We thought if we have just so many lecturers, we cannot concentrate really and develop a subject matter so that you can develop something. So now is breakfast prasadam, and then at 11, let us see, are we very much late? This is a question.
Yes. 15 minutes
late. 15 minutes, that's nothing. This is a very good sign of culture. So we will take prasadam, and then around 11:45, we will be a little later, there will be the Maha Abhishek, and after this will be a huge Maha feast, I mean really a big feast that I heard. And then, this is now very important, that we requested really to put this into your timetable. Please be there for 5 o'clock. We continue at 5 o'clock. There's a long pause after prasadam where you can associate with the devotees, discuss many things which are in your heart and so on. But at 5 o'clock there is a BBT multimedia presentation by our Brahma Muhurta Prabhu. And I have heard it is really something amazing. It has also a long, long time. This will be really a marathon of kirtan, bhajan, sadhu sangha, and it is simply wunderbar. It is simply wunderbar. So you kindly come at 5 o'clock. Please take your prasadam to your full heart satisfaction, and then Maha Abhishek at around 11:45. Do we need something for the prasadam distribution? Yeah. Is something for the puja department?
It's more for the organization of the prasadam in the temple. It goes about that. First the Maharajis will come and take the prasadam here, and then the Prabhus will come. They will be serving in this place for you. And you need around 10 servants for giving out prasadam. And yes, we also have to be a little bit hurry up because we have this hard time schedule, not too much talking while eating. More concentration on prasadam.
Rapt attention.
So then we will have around 11:30, 12 o'clock, Maha Abhishek.
How to organize this efficiently is really at the Maharajis, because you will be first, please, 10 very swift Maharajis, please enter the kitchen and get the prasadam. And the men, please, Hare Krishna. So please, Maharajis, 10 very fast